This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
Hello, I'm Mark Belanger. The UN Climate Change Conference, COP28, will be held in the United Arab Emirates from November 30th to December 12th, 2023. It is in many ways a follow-up to COP21, which produced the Paris Agreement on Climate Change. The agreement was adopted by 196 countries and entered into force in November 2016. Its main goal is to limit the world's temperature increase to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. To understand the importance of COP28 for trade unions, I talked to Jeremy Anderson. Mr. Anderson is the Director of Just Transition and Sustainable Transport for the International Transport Workers Federation. The ITF has about 20 million workers in 149 countries. I asked Mr. Anderson why labor unions should participate in the conference and why it is relevant to workers.
That's a good question, Mark, and something that I often get, because in many ways, COP global meeting can seem a long way from workplace issues. But there are two reasons why I think it's really important that trade unions engage in the COP. And the first one is that COP is fundamentally about government making binding agreements on climate action. And many of these agreements ultimately will have impact on the workplace. Whether that is about the actions around reducing emissions and the sorts of technologies that will be rolled out on workplaces, or the actions that need to be taken, harmful impacts of climate change. So, for example, heat stress, which has been a big topic in many workplaces around the world this year. And so ultimately, the decisions that are made at COP flow back down to plans and policies that governments adopt at the national level, and ultimately these have impact on the workplace. You know, COP is not natural territory for workers' influence. The global trade union movement has had some very important victories in the past. In particular, I'm thinking about getting Just Transition for Workers included in the 2015 Paris Agreement. But it's something that requires constant vigilance. Yeah, the reason we go to COP every year is that, we need to constantly remind governments and make sure that they understand. Because the other side of this is that as much as we need to make sure that our workers are protected, we know that we won't have effective climate action without the full engagement of the billions of workers around the world. So workers are co-designers of climate action, and this is the point that you need to continue to remind government of. But there's a second reason why it's important to go to COP, and speaking of this in particular, from the perspective of transport workers, which is COP is now perhaps the most important global meeting place for the key decision makers in the global transport industry. So this is employers, but it's multinational companies or global employer federations, government ministers to go to COP, or the big multilateral development banks like the World Bank. So they all go there for different reasons. One thing that they all have in common is that COP, they want to be seen to be taking action on climate. And our job in the trade union movement is to hold them accountable, make sure that everything they're doing around COP has a strong workers' dimension and recognises the importance of involving workers.
The conference has a number of agenda items that the labor movement has identified as important. I just want to get a sense of how you're going to react to these items. The first one is global stock take, which I assume means taking stock of what's happening globally. What's the agenda item of global stock take about?
The global stock take is related to the 2015 Paris Agreement, when all countries said, we agreed to limit global temperature rises to 1.5 degrees, because that has been the key tipping point before we go into irreversible damage to the climate. And so what countries agreed to do in Paris is that they would individually come up with their own plan for how they would contribute to reducing greenhouse emissions and stopping the world going over this 1.5 barrier. But every country submits their own national climate plan to the COP and has its own three-letter acronym at COP. It's called a Nationally Determined Contribution, or NDC. And what the Global Stocktake is doing is it's collecting all those NDCs, it's over 300, and seeing what they add up to. Now, it's no great mystery that even before they started this process nearly 2 years ago, that the current batch of NDCs, or National Climate Plans, are nowhere near enough, nowhere ambitious enough to deal with the climate challenge. But what's happening with the Global Stocktake is that there will be an agreed conclusion about what countries need to do next. And so as the trade union, we have been campaigning around this for the last 18 months, because there's a couple of things we think is really important. The first thing is we want strong language on a just transition for working. And this would mean, if we get this, that every union in the world can say to their government, you need to put something around the role of workers in your national climate plan. And the second thing we want is making sure that we come up with particular plans for each industry. So for ourselves in the ITF, we want to see particular commitments around the transport industry. This should apply to all industries, manufacturing, building, healthcare, and so on. So those are the two key things we want out of the Global Stocktake, the key decision that's going to be made.
Another item that the labor movement wants to talk about is the new collective quantified goal. Let me repeat that. The new collective quantified goal. What does that mean?
Otherwise known as the NCQD. So this is the new agreement on global climate finance. And what is accepted at the COP and in the UN Convention on Climate Change is that the countries with historic responsibility for creating all the emissions that have got us into this mess that we're in today, so this is countries like the US, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand, they have the responsibility to finance countries like Pakistan or Uganda or the Cook Islands that have not made any significant contribution to global warming historically. So everyone has agreed on that the rich country has this responsibility. What they have yet to agree on is how they're going to do this. So a key thing is how much it's going to be. The last one that they agreed on was $100 billion a year, perhaps the smallest big number that they could come up with. And everyone recognizes that was nowhere near enough. And we're now talking about at least $1 trillion a year. It could be $2 trillion. It could be $4 trillion. But there's two key items. Firstly, it's essential that we defend the role of public services in global south countries. So what many of the rich countries are saying is that, yes, of course we need to increase the amount from $100 billion to $1 trillion or $4 trillion, but that means that we need to involve the private sector because government will never be able to afford this. And countries in the global south are saying, well, hang on, you signed the Paris Agreement. It's your responsibility to make sure that we have access to the finance that we need. And by the way, private companies, they didn't sign the Paris Agreement. But there's a huge argument going on about this at the moment. The key thing we are saying is that every country should have the right to decide which of the infrastructure should be publicly funded and operated, and that climate finance agreement must not be used to force privatization on any country. That's the first thing that on the trade union side that we're campaigning for very hard. The second thing is making sure that labor standards and just transition standards are hardwired into this new agreement. There's going to be a huge agreement with this number we're talking about. It's going to involve lots of different governments, lots of different financial flows around the world. So it's very important that there is just transition. We're talking about core labor standards, freedom of association, right to collective bargaining, very important around climate finance projects. social dialogue, the right to have negotiations with governments and employers. And, yeah, not all countries at the COP support this. Of course, yeah, if you look at the UAE, there's no right to collective bargaining or freedom of association there. So it's very important that we do get a strong commitment to just transition standards in the new climate finance agreement.
There is an item entitled the Loss and Damage Fund. What does that refer to?
This has been a big demand of countries in the global south and many social movements for a number of years. And what it refers to is a situation like you had in Pakistan last year, where there were really serious floods, caused a lot of loss of life. At least 1,600 people lost their lives, and immense economic damage was conservatively estimated to have gone $30 billion worth of damage, and that was just the initial assessment. It was widely recognized that these floods were caused by global warming, and Pakistan has virtually no historic contribution to emissions. So it's clear that this is something that was caused by the rich industrial countries. The loss and damage is about what happens in scenarios like this, which are going to happen more frequently and unfortunately are probably going to happen a lot more in the future. So at the COP last year, COP27 in Sharm el-Sheikh, there was an agreement to set up a loss and damage fund after many years of this being resisted by the US and other governments in the global north. So this was seen as an important victory. What's happening now is that they're now arguing how they're actually going to fund it. Because they've set up the fund, but there's no money in it. So that's going to be a major point of debate and negotiation. But what we are saying on the trade union side is we must make sure that the workers' dimension of loss and damage is recognised. So going back to the Pakistan example, 40% of the rail network in Pakistan was wiped out as a result of the flood. And this created severe economic hardship for many rail workers in Pakistan, very limited social protection or income protection in Pakistan. And so our point is that we need to make sure that when there are these major events, that we will make sure that there's a labor impact assessment and there are actions taken to provide income support and welfare support for the workers.